Hello and welcome to the Rheology Podcast. I'm Brandon. In the face of a modern documented movement of Christians questioning what they were led to believe about God, Jesus, and Christianity, the church is responding. Or should I say church leaders are responding. In the midst of people trying to decide if they should return to church or even keep going to church, pastors and ministers have taken to social media with their answer to this new and confounding issue. In this So They Say episode, the conversation will center around what pastors and ministers are saying. Is what they are saying helpful or harmful? This is episode 11.
Gentlemen, good day to you. It's a glorious, wonderful day to be in the sunny Burbank, California studios of Rheology, isn't it? Is it not?
Isn't seriously. Burbank just full of smog? Is it really that beautiful?
There's one ray of light that penetrates through the fog and it hits the studios. Okay. It's amazing.
And that's where we are.
Yeah.
I see.
When you drive to the studios, I mean, you're in fog and then all of a sudden it's completely clear.
I've never noticed that.
Okay. Have you been driving with your eyes closed again?
I have a driver.
Ah, you just sit back and play your new emulated games on your iPhone.
I'm playing games. I'm doing business calls. Taking naps. That's just my life.
That's great, dude. You're living every man's dream. Well, I wanted to make this disclaimer before we really go any further because, I've met several people who want to put words in my mouth, and I would say let's just really clarify some things. Now, in the intro, I did say that pastors and ministers are responding, and obviously, I'm not lumping every pastor or every minister into this response thing here because I have some very good pastor minister friends of mine that they don't belong in this category. They're not responding in the way that we're going to be talking about. So I just wanted to make that extremely clear right off the bat that we are not saying this is absolutely every pastor or every minister, but probably quite a few of them. Wouldn't you say?
Well, it depends on what we're going to talk about.
Okay. Well, let me say this. We've on this podcast, we have mentioned the decades, like a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the statistics and the facts of the idea that church attendance has been in decline for a couple of decades.
Yes.
For sure. Now we know very well that the church attendance decline has like rapidly picked up since the epidemic or pandemic, whatever. And those types of things have led to these documented groups of people who are navigating away from something in the world of religion. Right. So we have like the nuns, Tyler, you brought that up a couple weeks ago. We have the nuns who are not affiliated with anything whatsoever. They still kind of believe in like some higher power deal, but they have no religious affiliation. And then we've also talked about the Duns, which we're going to reference a book that talks a lot about the Duns. It's from people who kind of like really did the first initial, surveying
Exodus.
and figured out who these people are and what they are. And then we have this, this whole thing we've talked about it too. This phrase called faith deconstruction or faith deconstructors, the people who are in the middle of deconstructing some things. There's an epidemic of decline that's happening, and it's endangering lots and lots of churches. No doubt, there are churches. We just said a couple episodes ago that the national church average attendance was. Do you remember what that was?
It's like 50.
60.
Yeah.
60. So, yeah. And as we said, if that's the average, there are lots of churches less than 60.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lots. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these churches are feeling the burn.
Which is not necessarily a problem.
It's not a problem. Unless you are really wanting to grow and you just can't grow and you're 20 people. So a lot of these churches are feeling the burn of the decline of attendance, obviously, and a lot of churches have closed their doors because they can't keep going. Mm-hmm. I know of a couple of churches just right off the hand that have done that in just the last couple of years, and sometimes they can rebirth into a new church plant. Sometimes they just most, a lot of times they don't. So, with all of that as the context of what we're going to talk about, the pastors of these churches, and not only the pastors, but I think what the pastors say, believe, and think kind of like, you know, influences other people who are still involved in these churches that are feeling the burn. They all start to kind of have this mentality of like, what's wrong with people? Why aren't they coming? And what can we do to get them back? Mm-hmm. And so, I just wrote down these words like bewilderment, right? This is kind of the response, right? The response to this is like, I'm bewildered. What's going on here? Why aren't people coming? I mean, we had this one family came for like 2 years and all of a sudden they don't come anymore. There's bewilderment. There's confusion. You know, what's going on in our culture? Is it this? Is it that? That turns into like blame. I mean, it can be very easy for pastors to say like, well, they don't come to church anymore because they got mad. They got mad. They didn't like this. They didn't like that, whatever. We didn't do the things they wanted to do. We told them no. Maybe someone got hurt by another family and now they don't go to church. We'll blame that. And then another thing is, and this turns into the guilt idea, is that one aspect of the blame game is, well, they have better things to do, mm-hmm. right? And they're the better. I'm air quoting here. Better things to do, like, and I've got this one post in mind, and maybe I'll talk about it. Maybe I won't. Anyway, where it's like, you know, kids are in sports, and now these people don't go because their kids play sports on Sunday, and they're choosing
right.
to go and do this. And then, so that's part of the blame. And then that turns into guilt. And now we're going to market the guilt on social media. Hey, if you're choosing to take your kids to this, or you're choosing, I don't care what you're choosing to do. If you're not here every Sunday, you're basically choosing something mm-hmm. other than God.
Yeah. As for me and my household,
right.
we will serve mm-hmm. the Lord.
Right.
At his household.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the whole statement and this like philosophy that they land on a lot is the Hebrews 10:25, which we've talked about, the whole not forsaking the assembly. And hey, this is the assembly. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't forsake it. This is what Jesus is talking about right here. And instead, you're going to do whatever you're going to do, and you're not here every Sunday. I know lots of, in the midst of this decline, I know lots of churches that have, you know, tried to use the big two major events every year to try to get people to come back, right? Because typically in Christmas time, people do want to go to a Christmas Eve service.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
Get the poinsettias out.
Yeah. Wear your poinsettia pin.
Yeah.
You know, and go and cool. And church is like, cool, this is how we're going to get it back. We got them. They're going to come for Easter. They're going to come with family. And now this is, so we're going to do everything we can to help reverse the problem. We're going to reverse the problem. And that's fine. And then what they think is like that they're going to have, you know, this is going to fix this.
And it works every year, right?
And it works every year.
Well, clearly it's working. Yeah. That's why we're talking about it.
Right. It works every year. Yeah. And so then when it doesn't work, we go right back to the blame game. And you know, it's not hard to find an example of this. It would be way harder to find less than like 50 examples mm-hmm. of this. I don't know about you guys, but like in my social media, you know, feeds, I have a lot of friends. I went to Bible college, and so I have a lot of friends that are in ministry. And as I said in the beginning, I have a lot of friends that are not doing this, or at the very least, they're not posting.
Sure.
Right. They're not posting. But then I have a lot that are. And it's turned into what we're calling here the guilt gospel of making people feel, let's put it this way. We forgot a word. Trying, mm-hmm. trying to make people feel bad because they don't come to church. Have either one of you experienced that here in the last, like, because we've said this as well, the three of us do not go to church. on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Out of the three of us, Tyler is the he's the one that's pulling. Churched. He's the most churched. He's pulling the weight for us.
It's a very light weight as well.
Yeah. Have you felt that? I mean, so gosh, how do I ask this question?
Have you felt it like in our personal lives? People guilting us in our personal lives?
Yeah.
And I think most people know where we're
You're asking like a missionary kid and a pastor's kid.
Yeah, we've
got a little bit of that.
Okay.
For me, yeah. I don't know about Chris.
You still? I was going to say like...
Not happening now.
Yeah, not anymore. Not in the last like... I don't know. I think most people in my life now know or familiar.
There's a... Yeah, I have a...
My life choices.
I've got a little bit going on.
That makes sense.
That comes from, honestly, you know... Grandparents.
Grandparents love to worry.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's not true, though. I feel like there's other... No, there. Now that I'm thinking about it, there's a lot of other like campus ministers or church people that will end up talking about... You do campus ministry. Where do you go to church?
It's not a direct attack.
No, it's not. But it is...
They're very under the table.
Well, sometimes it's not very under the table. I think they make a very like... This is why it's important. Like, mm-hmm. we really value church. Like,
yeah.
And they're not telling us we should value church.
Right.
But they are telling us, like, oh, but, like, the church is the engine that drives everything we do. So surely you're plugged into a church. Mm-hmm. And then, because even when we try to build church partners with through Impact, right, we, like, in the area, we're like, hey, if you have any students like that you know of that are going to Charlotte, we'd love to meet them with them.
Yeah.
But then they always turn into, you don't go to church right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should like join our church this push for like, what about the kids' church experience?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Because it's so right. And we've talked, and this is
because you guys have young kids. And so there's, I can only imagine that you guys have probably more guilt that comes up from not only other people, but maybe internally as well. Cause you do have young kids and they're not in church and mine are not young anymore. But even though when they were young and we weren't going to church, I feel like it was like a cyclical thing that my wife and I would bring up like every like other month.
Should we
really try to go? Maybe we should try to go Sunday. And it's like, but we get the same, you know,
always end up in the same place.
Same conclusion every time. Yeah. I think like I told you guys a story about someone who I just recently talked with on the phone, and I told them that my wife and I did not go to church, and like her first question was, and it wasn't a judgy question, but it was really just a question out of like, you know, how, you know, is like, how do you get Christian community? And I told you guys, it's like, as if she thinks that there's no other way.
Yeah.
It's like saying like, you don't go to the sink to get water. How else do you get water?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only place the water comes from.
That's
a
really good analogy now that I'm thinking about it.
It's like, well, I can dig a well in the back and find water if I want to, or I can go to the, you know, there's other sources, right, for that.
Yeah.
But in that mindset, since, and we've been talking about this for several episodes, this is kind of the idea, is that the church is the be-all, end-all. We refer to like the cul-de-sac, right? It's like when you go with God, you're going towards this cul-de-sac. You're going to a destination. The destination is the living in the cul-de-sac, right? And the church is right in the center of it, and your life just revolves around it, like the moon revolves around the earth. But it is everything. But the funny thing is, if you think about like if someone says, "Well, how do you get community, Christian community?" It's like most of the churches that I have worked in. Well, I'm not going to say most. I'm going to say all of them.
Mm.
We had a very small percentage of people who are actually really involved.
The core.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's typically, for most typical churches, it's like 5%-ish, right? And that would always become like a, well, you know, 5% of the people do 90% of the work. Uh-huh. It's like those lazy people can't, you know, and it's what I always heard. But So if you go to church, according to the statistics, there's no guarantee to find community at all.
Sure.
Matter of fact, the overwhelming majority of people who actually attend a church on a semi-regular basis don't apparently find community.
We when we were in our cycle of church finding, because we have a small family, we went to a church, and when we left, we were like, well, how do we get involved? And there was like no way for us to get involved and meet people. And right. I think this church, some student from Charlotte also went to the same church. And she was like, her experience was like, oh, it's like a theater, mm-hmm. like a movie theater almost. Mm-hmm. Like you just go in, it's mm-hmm. really dark mm-hmm. and they do the thing on the screens. And she's like, there's a lot of screens. And then you just leave. And that, yeah. and so like, yeah, you yeah. have to, like, we had to, obviously we don't go to that church now, but we had to like look for a community group. And there, I don't think they were offering one during that time of the year.
Yeah.
So yeah, to your point,
yeah.
even if you go to a church, you're not guaranteed if that's even what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good question. Are people really looking for community, Christian community through a church, or are they just going because that's kind of, you know?
Well, they don't know where they're going because they've been so guilted.
Yeah.
In the first place.
I should be going. I'm just
going to show up and see what happens.
I'm going to show up and see what happens.
And then the church tells you what you need to be looking for.
Should be doing.
Yeah.
And we've said this 100 times, maybe we've said it 100 times, but you know, I've told you guys like those four expectations that every church has, right? It's come. That's the first thing. Get here. That's number one. That's your expectation. The second one is the tithe, mm-hmm. you know, to give. The third one is to serve. And obviously not, you know, we don't care if you serve outside the church. We really want you to, right. I mean, you know, we need help in the kids ministry, or we need people in the parking lot to help greet stuff. And then the fourth thing is to go and find someone to come and do the same stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you're right. They don't know. Oh, we'll just go and see what happens, and we'll let the professionals tell us what to do. And when the professionals tell us what to do and it doesn't actually start to like mean anything, and then people start going, why go? I didn't really like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different if you go to a mega church and you got a seriously professional speaker, which that's not typical, right?
Most
churches don't have a professional speaker, and they still are speaking for 40 minutes. I don't know why. Yeah.
That is one of your things.
And it is. I'm like, please don't. Do 10 minutes and you'll do great. Or 8. We can go 8. We can keep going lower if you want to. But it's like, and you go to like a mega church, and you know, we're around Charlotte, North Carolina. For those of you who didn't know, we are not actually in sunny Burbank, Charlotte, California.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Burbank is sunny or not, but anyhow,
I'm telling you, there's so much smog.
It's not. Okay. That's a myth. That's Bob Barker told me that it was
sunny every day.
I believed it. I believed it. So we're around Charlotte, and obviously one of the biggest mega churches in the United States, maybe even the world, is nestled right here in Charlotte. Anyway, I'll say their name because we're not saying anything bad against them. It's Elevation.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you didn't know.
We all know this.
It's Elevation, and Elevation, I mean, you can say all the negative things you want to about Elevation, but man, they put on a really good show. There's no doubt about it. They really do. They're high level. And listen, Pastor Steven, he's not my thing. But he is a showman, and he is a good stage presence person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He is a very good personality. I think a lot of things he says is really good stuff. I don't like the way he says it. It's very showy and whatever. I don't care. Some people, that's their thing. Cool, fine, whatever. But when the, as we've said, also when the rest of the world or the rest of the nation anyway is trying to be elevation and you only have 125 people showing up, I'm just going to go ahead and just think that number one, you're probably not really highly qualified to speak for 40 minutes.
Sure.
And I would just say that probably the band is not highly qualified to like cover you two or cover anybody or even cover the Christian songs themselves.
Yes.
So not. To be on stage.
Yes. On a stage. Yeah, right. Yeah, to be on a stage where everybody's looking at you. So there's, you know, so when people, for me, when pastors like go, what's wrong? It drives me crazy because I'm like, okay, so here, we're gonna transition. We're gonna play a little fun game. We do this every once in a while. Chris, you are about to open up a new restaurant, okay? And we always use this analogy. You're gonna serve chicken.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can he choose a different thing to serve?
Nope.
Oh. Okay.
He's been ordained by God to go, and it's his calling.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's his calling.
Very hypothetical.
The Lord told him go and set up a chicken restaurant, and so he's going to go and create this new fast food chicken restaurant. And it's really funny. Think about this. There are a lot of new startup chicken restaurants.
So there's too many.
Too many. I'm not saying that Chick-fil-A should be nobody, but there should be someone maybe. You know, just as good as Chick-fil-A, maybe a little different, but everybody else is trying to do what they do. And anyway, Chris, we'll come back to Chick-fil-A someday. Don't mess with God's chicken, y'all. You hear? Chris, you're gonna set up a fast food restaurant, and he goes through the whole process, and he's like has opening day, and he's giving out free chicken sandwiches, and he's got a big crowd, and he's like, hey, this is awesome, this is awesome, this is gonna be a home run. I can tell. I can sense it. And over the next couple of months, there's just a steady decline of customers.
Sure.
And
we can all see that happening.
Right. Yeah. Chris's chicken is not what we all thought it would be.
My chicken's great. It's there. They're the problem.
There it is.
They're the problem.
There it is.
There it is. Boom. Yeah.
They don't understand my chicken.
Yeah. They do not. They don't. So Chris, I mean, as a business owner, honestly, what would be like the first things you'd think of? Like you're in trouble here financially, this business is going to go bad. What's your first thoughts of like, how would you rectify the situation? How would you start to think in a positive way of finding a solution? What would be the first thing you'd try to do?
Is this like me playing the game for real, or am I playing?
Playing for real.
Okay.
If it really was failing, you, and you've put money into it. Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be like evaluating my own business.
All
right. Right? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What are people wanting?
Right.
Am I providing that?
Yeah.
Bridging that gap?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. That's
nice. Yeah. I mean, we have talked about business plans before, right? And the three of us have gone through the idea of a business plan. I you know, I'm in the business world. I'm a small business.
Yeah, but we all run a business.
Yeah, we all run a business. So we all understand that in the business world, before you even start a business, you go through these types of questions.
Sure.
You start to figure out, number one, is there a need for another chicken sandwich in this area? I would probably say no.
I would never do a chicken sandwich.
No.
See, now what would he do? I want to know what would you do?
Roast beef. No.
Oh, roast beef.
It doesn't matter.
Snails?
No, it would be, I've always thought about doing a fried rice restaurant.
Yeah?
Yeah, not enough of those.
I haven't found one yet.
Hey, dude, I'm a sucker for fried rice.
Me too. Everyone okay.
I'd probably go that route.
Yeah. There's a need out there.
There is.
There's a need. Okay. So you find your need. Right?
Yeah.
No fried rice. Okay, cool. Now we need to figure out, do we have the right...
Dominating the market.
We will dominate. Do we have the right recipe for fried rice?
Yes.
I think we do. It's passed down from a generation, and everybody in my family says, this is amazing. You need to do something. Okay, cool. Yeah. Nice. Am I the right person to start this up? And do I need other people to be involved?
What do you think, Chris?
I think I can do it.
He can do it.
By yourself.
Yeah.
He can do it by himself.
I can solo the markets.
And so therefore you've already started the evaluation process before you're knee, you know, waist deep into this thing.
Sure.
And you already have to start thinking about who we are, what we do, why we do it, who's our market, who are we marketing to, who are our customers, what do they look like? What's the area look like? What restaurants are in the area? What are they charging? You know, if I go in and someone's charging $7 for a sandwich and I'm over here or for fried rice and I'm like, nah, we're doing $14. There better be a good reason why you're charging, you know, 100% more. It better be 100% better than churches never do this.
Yeah, but Scott, how dare you compare the house of the Lord
right
to a business model?
Ooh.
That is not.
I dare. How about that? I dare. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, that is it. But the reality is
well, we're using our language, right? So when we say church, we're not saying the thing, the entity or the idea that Jesus died for.
Yeah, we're not saying the ecclesia. We're not even going to say
that. How dare you say that?
Yeah, yeah. If we even want to say like, and we've talked about this before, if you want to lump people in with the definition of church, okay. So we're not even talking about the people.
Yes,
we're talking about the actual brick and mortar entity of, you know, a nonprofit organization.
Because again, people still have to be past a certain place in order for them to critically talk about the church we are doing right now, right?
Yes. Like,
I think
you have to come to meet us on this common ground.
If this is your first episode, then you would probably, why are they just crapping all over?
Yeah.
Please go back.
Yeah.
The Bride of Christ.
We're not, we definitely don't want to crap on the ecclesia for sure. And we definitely don't want to crap on church either.
Yeah.
But we're crapping on people who are like, crapping on everybody else for not coming.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like,
it's called manipulation.
Yes, it is.
And why would that happen?
And crap theology.
Why would that happen?
Just kidding.
Why does manipulation happen?
In this instance, yeah.
I think fear. Fear of losing a system that has given you your life. I mean, we're all technically in ministry.
Yeah.
If Chris and I, if all of our supporters dropped, then we couldn't do what we do.
No.
And so we need financial support to do what we do.
Right.
And I think a lot of, I mean, we know pastors, right? I think a lot of the manipulation, and it's not even conscious manipulation. They're not trying and actively saying, I need to manipulate my members to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I think it comes from this fear of, we've just got to keep this thing going no matter what. And you will... what's the word I'm looking for? You'll excuse anything to keep the thing going because it's God's thing. Like I'm doing God's work and I'll use any kind of tactic that I feel like he's telling me to use to get people to do the thing that he's telling them to do.
Right.
Right. It's all based in fear. I'm sure power and money. But obviously like,
but okay,
I'm going to say self-importance.
I mean, it comes also from like insecurity as well.
I want to say this too, though, because like I don't feel like it's always out of like antagonistic intent, right?
No.
Because what really is happening is people don't understand that church, the word church, right, the nonprofit organization, the business side of it is like that isn't the same thing as ecclesia, right? Mm-hmm. And I think people, if you can separate the two, then you can like understand where these fears and insecurities are coming from. But I think a lot of the time, like it comes across as manipulative because like they really believe that they probably won't ever say this out loud, but like the best place to get water is from the sink.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Isn't the only place. They'll probably say that too, but the best place is to come to church to understand who God is. You use manipulative tactics in a way to get them there, but there is also this belief that you meet God here at this house, which is what we're also saying is not true.
Right.
Like, correct.
But then that
can be
that, but that intersects with also this, like on top of that, I'm not getting paid unless people come here.
Right.
So I think there's
a lot going on.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. No, I agree a million times over that. I think that there is a real unhealthy enmeshment of like what we think we know and our own desires where it gets real muddy, because I think both of those things live at the exact same time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's real muddy because it is. I mean, we've talked about cognitive dissonance before, you know, where you make it right in your own mind, because yes, I definitely believe that church leadership, at the very least, and as I said earlier, that bleeds into like other people who are dogmatic about going to church, and all of them believing that yes, this is the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, this is the road you take to get to God, really. It's the only way.
The only way to do it is through a church, right? And yeah. To what you say before, like it doesn't really count.
Yeah,
all your good deeds and all your Christian deeds it's not official unless it's through the church. So the only way you can really live out your life with God is through the things that we're offering you.
Yeah.
Well, if it's not here, find another church to do it then.
Right. Find another church. Yeah. Cause like the person I was saying that was like, well, how do you find community? My gosh. In her mind.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, this is what God ordained. Yeah. He set this up. And how do you, he didn't set anything else up because he came and built and died, came to build it and came to die for that. Here's the problem, though, in my little humble opinion, is that this guilt thing has been, it's been there, done that. It's not new.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Why do we keep going back to that when we are a more sophisticated age, let's put it that way, a more sophisticated age now that has, you know, everything at its fingertips, basically, to learn about culture and society and, you know, human beings, how we act and how we think. And I think that for me is like, you know, you can't keep playing the same cards over and over and over and over and over, and to the point where, and you still think that, like you joked about earlier, you know, it's not my chicken, you know, it's you guys. Something's wrong with you.
But sometimes that works.
I think it has a pretty
manipulation works. Yeah. Man.
Well, yeah. It does. It's short lived though.
Yes. Yeah. Not long term.
It does. But I think its effects get minimized over time.
The half life decreases.
Right. Because people keep hearing it, and it's almost like, you know, it's almost like your mom, the old adage of like your mom saying, you know, you're going to get a spanking, and the kids are like, oh, man, you know.
Sure.
But when she says, when your dad gets home, then you're like, oh, crap. But if dad gets home and he doesn't do anything about it, then you all of a sudden condition yourself to say, like, going, there's nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
So like, okay, all this talk about guilt, I've heard it for 20 years now.
Yes.
It doesn't do anything anymore for me.
That's why COVID came in. And everyone's like, oh, no one's allowed to go to church. And then when churches opened up again, not as many people went back to church.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I think there's like this huge, like, it just revealed to how people.
Well, and not only that, but the way that we tried to handle situations during COVID for Christianity and in church world is that we made it okay to do it via a computer or a phone or whatever.
Yeah.
And now, even now, and we know this, we've seen articles and conversations about this. And now some pastors are saying, like, you know, well, we just talked about one a few months ago about like, so we're going to do a series here coming up that's going to be called What's Wrong With This Picture. And one of the pictures I shared with you guys was this idea. Someone is saying, like, you can't do community from your sofa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, what about small groups? Most people are sitting on furniture in there, you know, and but during the pandemic we could.
Yeah, that counted.
So it's basically like we've got a pope saying when we can and when we cannot do things. And apparently at certain times it's fine. And certain times it's not. Mm-hmm. And people start to go, yeah, I don't know. I'm buying this. Yeah. But I will say another thing too, is that
sorry if I got you off track.
No. I think another thing to say is this, is that sometimes it's just that the product isn't very good.
A lot of times.
And the thing is like, no amount of guilt is going to make someone come back to that church because they're like, you're boring.
Yeah.
I'm bored. You're not a good speaker. Mm-hmm. If I say something like I'm not getting anything out of it, the immediate response is like, well, this isn't about you.
Yeah.
Well, it has to be. You want me there?
Yeah.
It has to be about you. Okay, so I'm going to talk about this book we talked about, Church Refugees. If you've never heard before, you need to go and check it out. So they talk about this. They interview tons of people who are done, right? And they're just done with church. I have no desire to go back. They're not done with Jesus at all. Matter of fact, they're moving on with him and they're moving away from church. So one of the things that they talk about is like this mentality, which kind of goes with the four little things we talk about, the expectations, is like come, they say like go, plop, and pay. So you go there, you plop, you sit down, okay, and you pay,
then
you leave. That's it. That's that mentality of like, well, you don't really let us do anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm, I got to sit here and just watch your show. You want me to come? That's what it feels like. All you want me to do is just, the reason why you're getting so upset is because you want me to come and sit and listen to you, mm-hmm, and see, watch your show and, you know, go into the movie theater and just, I'm just going to watch your movie.
Yeah.
Even though I don't like this movie, I don't like the actors. What's the point? I don't think, here's my desire. Okay. How this happens, I don't know. But my desire is that leaders, church leaders, would finally start to think to themselves, like Chris said a while ago, you know, let me do a little self-analysis here. Let me stop and take inventory of what's going on, mm-hmm, here. What the elements involved. Am I a good speaker?
No.
Probably not. Can I do a survey? Can I do a blind survey? Can I hire a company to survey for, mm-hmm, us? Mm-hmm. What can we do to, I mean, I've said this a bunch over the last several years with a lot of different people, and it still blows me away that Chick-fil-A still hands out surveys. Mm. How many more customers do you want? Yeah. How many more people do you want?
Much more information do you need?
Yeah.
How much coming back?
I mean, people come. Yeah. Isn't that enough? But for them, no, that's not a part of how they do business. That's not a healthy practice to get going. So I think they need to understand who they're dealing with. This is a quote from the book. It says, in this book, we take up the task of understanding the de-churched as church refugees. They're people who've made an explicit and intentional decision to leave organized religion. They didn't drift away casually. They didn't move to a new city for a job and never got into the groove of church in that new community. They didn't marry agnostic spouses and they gave up on trying to convince them. No, at some point, the de-church decided in a very intentional way that they would be better off leaving the church altogether. So that debunks this whole idea that people are just too busy, mm-hmm, and they're lazy. Mm-hmm. No, they're making intentional decisions to make this move. It says the church, they feel, is keeping them from God. According to them, the church, not God, is the problem.
Wow.
And they've stayed in the church long past the point that it ceased to be fulfilling or even sustaining. These are the people who are deciding not to come to church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they don't react to the the guilt strategy.
Yeah. Do you remember like what's the number of these people?
They didn't have it. Actually, this is a new thing. It's probably not like incredibly new, but I think they came out in 2022. I just found out about this like a couple weeks ago, that Group Magazine got with Josh Packard, who's the writer of this. And they said, we need to put some numbers to this. We need to actually do some statistics. So they said, I think I wrote it. I don't know where I wrote it down. 30 million people
have
left the church.
Yeah. Okay.
And they said there are 7 million about to leave any day now. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot.
That's a lot of people. And they have this, I'm going to buy it because you can buy it. It's their whole, you know,
the research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole thing. But there's, you can go to several different websites. I found it on a couple different websites of these numbers, which are pretty insane. They also say, don't say that we left because we didn't want to follow Jesus or because we're too consumeristic or too selfish or too sinful. The self-righteous assumptions and finger pointing are a kick in the ribs to those already paralyzed by fear and aching doubt. Please don't do that. Wow. That's one of them. This book just goes on and on and on. I can sit here and just quote forever. And I do have a couple other quotes, but as the thing is, I just wanted to like scream so bad at the top of my lungs that, you know, for church leaders to quit trying to point the blame somewhere else.
Yeah.
And none of us, the three of us have said it and declared it very, very clearly that we're not saying church is wrong to go to. We've never said that.
Church is not wrong to go to.
Church is definitely not wrong to go to.
Correct.
It is okay to do. Typically, it doesn't do a whole lot.
It can, though.
It can. Really can. But unfortunately, when you have leaders like this who fail to see the problems of actually progressing and doing something, there's no doubt that these things are going to continue to have problems. Mm-hmm. The attendance is still going to decline. And doors will be closed. The mega churches won't. They'll continue to do their thing because they're a much, much, much better version than all the rest.
Yes.
And so at the very least, whether I find, you know, Christian community or not, at the very, very least, I'm entertained.
Yes.
And I like it.
But in which for our world now, entertainment is the thing. Yeah. Just like hold my attention and I'm going to consume it.
And that's it's always seen as a negative thing. I don't really see it as a negative thing. I mean, I consume stuff all the time. I want to learn, you know. Right. And sometimes if it's I have no problem if you want to be a type of church that's going to go and try to entertain people and potentially hopefully help plant a seed of them to want to learn more down the road, go get them.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. And not everybody is set up to do that. And not everybody is qualified to do that. And that's the problem that, honestly, church leaders face. And I think Chris kind of hit it on the head a little bit a while ago of like, if they fail to see what they're doing as, you know, anything other than God's ordination, it's going to be difficult.
Oh, yeah.
We're just, I don't want to add to like the blame or judging the church. But it's also such a old and right. Like has the church service grown or has it differed any at all in the last like 50 years? It's the same thing, right? You know, like
different skin.
Right.
Same,
I mean,
same
right.
Thing.
So like Elevation, right? Like the way they do it. It is a show, right? And they've probably done research. Uh-huh. Which is why so many people go to it, because they've actually mastered all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But like but it's still like three songs, right?
Yeah.
An MC maybe who kind of puts the whole thing together.
Right. Yeah. Something in the middle, a transition.
And then the teaching and then like all these other
and
things.
And then a last song.
Yeah, which is again like that's not a biblical like
mandate
or prescription,
which doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
Which doesn't mean it's a bad thing, but like why are we keep doing that? Why is that the definition of Sunday morning church service? Right, I still don't understand how.
Well, that's
still
a whole nother episode. There's no doubt about that. but yes,
right. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, all of this is coming down to like, I mean, it says in all those quotes, right? It's stifling people.
Yes,
they're not actually feeling, but most of the messages coming out of the church leaders is, if you want to experience the fullness of God, be part of church.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
The data is actually showing us like
the opposite. Absolutely right.
And it's so like, I don't know, it's so crazy to me.
It is crazy because to me, it's just a, don't tell me what I need to do. Just come to church. you know.
Yeah, and but the leaders are almost like, but we're not allowed to change it, right? So you have to appreciate it the way it is because this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But like, why is it still this way? Like, why can't anyone? I mean, I've heard you say this, Scott, before. Of like, if it's like a different like theme every week, if it's just like this week we're doing only prayer, or this week is mm-hmm. only worship music. Mm-hmm. Or this week where it's only like, I don't know, serving, whatever it is, like that could be a great like change up of how churches do it. But no one, I haven't heard of a single church that was willing to do that. Instead, they're willing to use this dying model to continue to grab this same group bucket of people.
Go on, Chris.
Because all these other like people who are seeing through the veil, undoing the curtain, seeing like, oh, there's a tiny man telling me I should be doing mm-hmm. this.
Right,
I don't need
right,
to listen
right.
to this guy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think yeah, it's a in my mind, like the first step is those people who are initiating new church plants have got to do things better.
Yeah, cuz they're because just doing the same thing.
By right. time they get to be a church and 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road and they want to change.
Yeah.
No, those elders and stuff like that are not going to let them change.
Nope.
Primarily. Some of these old churches have been around a long, long time. They're not going to listen. The bottom line is that they're not going to. Most of them are not going to survive because they can't get young people to come in and fill the positions of the older people. They eventually. But church planting, though, there's a problem there because they really need to plant churches like a business, at the very least, with a business plan to go through and say, "What are we doing?
Yeah,
how are we doing that?" The problem is that. Man, it is such a it's got a strong gravitational pull to just be a church.
Yeah.
Because you know why? It's easier to do that.
Yeah.
Because you get money, you go, and you set up a service that people come to, and immediately these people are donating yeah. back to the service. Immediately.
Yeah.
It's harder to do things the way you guys have been doing it, where you raise your own support, and you just go and meet with people one-on-one, and you do one-on-one disciple making. Building a church, unfortunately, that's why I don't want to use the word church for anything else except for that model, because yep. that is yeah. what church is. And if you're going to go plant a church, unfortunately, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to do. And they're not going to do a prayer service for 50 minutes. That's too weird for most people. And by the way, you know, listen, if you're going into it saying, hey, I want to build a church, we're going to do things different. We're going to do a prayer service for 45 minutes. Well, you better also not have a desire to grow either.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exponentially. Yeah.
Right. It's
yeah.
going to be 15 to 20 people and yeah. be happy with that. Yeah. If it does get to 30, be surprised.
Yeah.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yep.
But that should not be your goal. Yes, elevations and all that stuff, they have absolutely done everything they can to research and understand strategy, and they've done it yeah. very, very well. But nobody else does that. And they all try to be lookalikes at that point.